Heads up, drivers. It's now against the law to use your phone if you're driving up into Georgia. Will Florida ever join the hands-free movement? And are hands-free laws good enough to keep you safe out there? Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and just ahead, a new distracted driving law is in effect in Georgia. You need to make sure you heed it if you are crossing the state line this 4th of July holiday. What are your questions about this? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, some real talk on the show, how African-Americans in Jacksonville really feel about longstanding loyalty to the Democratic Party. Listen in later in the hour. Plus, some tips for celebrating this 4th of July safely from Jacksonville Fire and Rescue. We'll talk to them later in the show. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, if you live in Georgia or you're driving up there on the roads this week, starting this week, make sure that you don't use your cell phone while you're behind the wheel. Yes, a new hands-free law took effect in Georgia July 1st. Now, what it says is that a driver cannot hold a phone in their hand or even use any part of their body to support their phone while you're in motion. If you're driving in Georgia, you can only now use your cell phone to make or receive phone calls by using speakerphone, earpiece, wireless headphone, or a phone that's connected to an electronic watch or a GPS, say. Georgia joins 15 other states prohibiting drivers from using their handheld cell phones while driving. Now, this hands-free law is a primary enforcement law. That means a police officer can cite you for doing this without any other traffic offense taking place. If they see you doing this, they will pull you over. Let's get a little broader in looking at this. 47 states now ban text messaging while driving, including Florida. But Florida's distracting driving law isn't nearly as strong as Georgia's, and critics have long said it needs to be strengthened. If you're planning on driving over the 4th of July holiday, as many of you are, particularly through Georgia, you need to be aware of this new hands-free law and also heed some common sense tips to stay safe out there. Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Firm gives driver safety talks across the First Coast, and he's here now with more about the new law and what you need to know. Hey, Wayne.
Hi. Thanks for asking me in.
And here's our question to callers. Are you traveling this 4th of July holiday? Are you driving? What are your questions about the new hands-free law in Georgia and the distracted driving law in Florida? A little refresher for you as you head out on the roads. Give us a call safely at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets go to @MelissaInJax, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. All right, Wayne, so beginning July 1, Georgia adopted this new hands-free law. What does it mean? What does it specifically state for drivers?
Well, it is pretty much what it sounds like. The driver cannot have the phone in their hand or, I suppose, cock their head over against their shoulder and try to hold it in place. And I'm not sure beyond that what you could do.
Yeah.
But it's a step, maybe two steps, beyond the baby step that Florida took when it made texting a secondary offense. The point being that the officer can't stop the person if they think they're texting. That's the Florida way of doing it. In Georgia, it is a primary offense if the officer sees that a person has a phone in their hand or in some other way up against their ear. So it requires hands-free. And it's a step, two steps, but still inadequate, I think. But that's, and we can discuss the reasons why.
And why is it inadequate?
Well, truth of the matter is, hands-free is not all it's cracked up to be. The studies that have been done show that distraction is not just about a manual distraction or your hand when you pick up the phone. It's not just about your eyes, visual distraction when you look at the phone. It's also about brain distraction, cognitive distraction. When you're on the phone with somebody who is miles away, you're engaged in a conversation. That means you're listening to them and they're listening to you. And the truth of the matter is that you're formulating your next thing that you're going to say. That is just as dangerous as picking up the phone and having it in your hand. Those studies have been repeated time and time again. And in multiple meetings that I've had and spoken about distracted driving, you might have 100 people in the meeting, and you can ask this question. Has anybody in this group, can you tell me that you have been on the phone, even hands-free, and then wondered at some point, did I miss my exit? Did I miss the intersection? Did I miss the driveway to the store that I was going to?
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost 100% of the people that say, yes, I've had that experience, meaning that it's the brain that is distracted.
Then why do we keep doing it? Is it just our ego as human beings that we think, oh, I can handle having one part of my attention on the road and the other part of my focus on the phone?
I suppose we think we can, but
We fool ourselves into that, don't we?
Well, and these phones, at least for most of the adult population, these phones, these devices have kind of crept into our lives. We didn't plan for that. And truth of the matter, just think about it. We took our driver's test back when, maybe took driver's ed. Nobody ever gave us a course in how to drive distracted. Why? Because you can't do it.
That's right.
It's impossible to do it and do it well. And you've just been lucky if you haven't had an accident and you've been doing it.
Now, the Georgia hands-free law that went into effect July 1 was passed, according to the governor and the state legislature there, because the state saw significant increases in crashes and deaths on the road, the majority rear-end crashes, single-car crashes, and crashes by drivers age 15 to 25. They note that the other 15 states that have passed a hands-free driving law have seen a 16% decrease in traffic fatalities in the years after those laws were passed, and it went down even further as the law took hold among the public.
Well, it makes sense that any part of distraction that you take out of the equation is good. And so if it keeps you from reaching for the phone or it keeps you from looking at the phone, then you've gotten some benefit. It still doesn't solve the problem, but it is a favorable step, and those statistics help to demonstrate that it is a help.
Now, this law, you see, it sounds like it's a step in the right direction, and you wish Florida would follow suit. Our law is not nearly as tough.
Florida needs to do that. The Florida law does make texting illegal. It's illegal. It's just that it's a secondary offense. But people should realize that if your car is weaving or you're going slower than the flow of traffic, if the officer thinks that you're driving carelessly, the officer can stop you. And it doesn't have to be connected to the phone, but then he'll realize. And if there's an accident, of course, the officer who comes to investigate it will actually ask the person, were you using the phone? Because the accident report now requires that the officer say whether the person was distracted or not. Mm-hmm. And then the officer will look and see.
They can check your phone in about 2 seconds.
Sure,
yeah.
Absolutely. And they have the ability. And if it's a if it's a death situation or a serious injury, then they're going to get that much more. They're going to take the phone. They're going to listen to it. They're going to check the calls, and they're going to get some idea as to what was going on. And I've heard the interviews because one of these kinds of cases comes into our office or any of the other offices that do personal injury and wrongful death work like we do, the very first thing you want to know is, what was the reason that this accident happened? Because we assume that people don't intend to be in an accident.
And if you're in Georgia now and you're breaking this hands-free law and you kill someone with your vehicle,
yes,
what are the penalties? Well, are they increased?
Well, the penalties are increased. They've built in a bit of a warning period up there in Georgia because they want people to become used to it. And there's a first offense and a second offense and the like. But in reality, there have been manslaughter prosecutions all across the country for texting with an accident that results in death. And the more laws like were put into place in Georgia are ignored, the greater the likelihood that somebody's going to be prosecuted for manslaughter.
All right. And if you're just tuning in, it's the day before the 4th of July. Are you planning to drive this holiday? You need to be aware of a new law up in Georgia. It's a hands-free law. No more holding your phone for any reason while you're driving up there. What are your questions about this law, Florida's laws, driver safety? As we speak with Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Firm, it's 549-2937. Give us a call out there. Be safe while you do it. Marcus is along Pearl Street in Springfield, I think. Hey, Marcus, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Mr. Hogan. I am in Springfield. Mr. Hogan, I have two questions / comments for you. I'll take my answers off the air. The first applies to the new Florida law. You seem to be unhappy that it's only a secondary offense. The bottom line is police abuse these laws all the time. They especially abuse them against people of color, just like the seatbelt law was a secondary offense. And now the police can just simply claim you weren't wearing your seatbelt, pull people over for no reason, and then illegally search them. The same thing is going to happen with this hands-free law. It's just another wedge into our freedom. Number two, as far as the Georgia law goes, you seem to feel like it doesn't go far enough, and based on your logic, we shouldn't actually have a face-to-face or person-to-person conversation with somebody in our car either, because that's distracting too, just like talking on the phone. Thank you very much. I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay, Marcus. And what about the civil liberties questions that he brings up?
Those are significant. They've been brought up in the legislative debate. It was part of the decision or reasons why it was not adopted. My recollection is that Senator Bradley from principally Clay County had raised those questions. But as I pointed out, an officer can stop you right now if he feels or he or she feels that you are driving carelessly, too slow or weaving or some other kind of thing that they notice. So if an officer is disposed toward doing that sort of thing, they can do it now without regard to these particular statutes that are there. On the question of face-to-face, I had the experience. I spoke to a Rotary Club, I believe it was, about the problems of brain distraction and the like. And a gentleman came up to me at the end of the talk and said, well, how is that any different than my wife being in the seat next to me? And I explained to him that the research has been done, and it indicates that there are then two sets of eyes on the traffic. Everybody's had the experience of your passenger being the one that applies the imaginary brake because they see something that the driver doesn't. Yeah. They also are aware of the traffic conditions going on around you, whereas the person on the phone doesn't. And to which the gentleman said, well, sir, that's not the answer I wanted. I suppose maybe he wanted an answer that said, well, no, you shouldn't be speaking with your wife or she shouldn't be speaking with you while you're driving. But the truth of the matter is it adds a safety factor for somebody else to be in that front seat and paying attention along with the driver.
What about his concern that police will abuse this law?
Well, I mean, that if they can abuse this law, they can abuse the current basic careless driving law. In other words, if
people of color might be more likely to be pulled over.
They can do the very same thing. If you have an officer who is one, poorly trained or has escaped getting properly evaluated by the department, and they're out there and they have tendencies along those lines, they have ways to do it apart from this specific thing about texting or the one in Georgia about not holding the phone.
Now, according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, few citations are being given out this week. Officers are instead, they're kind of opting to issue warnings because this is the most significant change to traffic safety laws in Georgia in a generation. This is a big change for them.
It's a big change, and they've built in a 90-day warning period. And then it's a first notice. After that, it's a very small fine, that sort of thing. So you're going to have some discretion because they realize this is new for drivers. And so if somebody were stopped in Georgia tomorrow, chances are then they would just get a warning by the officer.
And what are your questions about Georgia's new hands-free law and all laws here in Florida when it comes to texting while driving, driver safety? Give us a call to let us know where you're headed this 4th of July, 549-2937. You know, the last time you were on this show, Wayne, talking about this, you quoted the Eaglesong Hotel California.
I did.
He said, "We are all just prisoners here of our own device." And that stuck with me because it's true.
It's so
we are so addicted to our cell phones that it's almost become a national disease.
We feel as though we have to be in touch with everybody all the time in our lives. And the truth of the matter is when you're driving a two-ton vehicle at speed on a highway, that's extremely dangerous to you and to anybody else if you are not fully applying yourself to the task of driving. And so that's the one time in our lives when we really should not be using these devices that distract our attention. What's tomorrow? Tomorrow's Independence Day.
That's right.
Why should we be subject to the domination of these phones? And why should we feel as though we have to be responsive to people when they call us on the phone? I have my phone here. You can program the phone so that it says, and I did that this morning, and you'll see what my technical capabilities are here. And you can program it to give you an excuse to not answer the phone.
Mm-hmm. And what do you have it set to?
Hi, it's Wayne Hogan. I don't use my phone when I'm driving because it's dangerous, and I may be driving now. In fact, this morning I'm driving to WJCT Studios to speak with Melissa Ross and First Coast Connect listeners about the dangers of distracted driving. So please leave a message.
Very nice. And thanks for the plug, too.
Well, you're welcome. And my usual message, of course, is much shorter than that. But everybody can program these phones to customize it. And I've had multiple people who call me, and they understand then. They mention, when they leave me a message, they mention, well, I appreciate that message and the safety that it promotes. You know, we've, over this past period of years, 5 years now, we've spoken to over 500,000, not just our firm, but other firms around the country, to students before prom and before graduation to try to get this message across about the dangers of distracted driving. Then we developed a For the Workforce program because employers need to know that their companies are at risk in a variety of ways: OSHA fines, workers' compensation expenses, liability insurance, employees being jailed, a whole range of things, not to mention personal injury and wrongful death claims that might be made by firms doing the work that we do, so that they can understand that they can control their employee populations. Because an employer is responsible for the actions of the employee as long as it's in the course and scope of it. It can be the employee's own phone. It can be the employee's own car. But if it's in the course and scope of the employer's business, the employer's on the line. And that's why we've spoken to these business organizations, almost all the major nonprofits here in Jacksonville, to help them protect themselves and the driving public.
Now, you've been doing this free distracted driving class for companies and organizations and students for how many years now?
We're in our fifth year doing this.
And what was it about this issue that prompted you to get involved in this way? What attracted you to this?
It's, you know, you would think we knew it instinctively, but it took the situation of a friend of mine, Joel Feldman, in Philadelphia, whose daughter, Casey, had a summer job and was hit by a distracted driver as she was walking in the crosswalk to her summer job. He decided, he and his wife, Diane, to try to make something good out of something bad and started this program. It's the same sort of thing. A little while back, you had Governor Graham and Chris Hand on about their book, America,
The Owner's Manual.
The Owner's Manual.
Right.
They use the example of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, MAD, as a way of illustrating how people can group together and take action and change behavior. MAD did that, and as a result, there has been a steady decrease in the number of deaths and injuries as a result of alcohol-related driving, another form of distraction when you think about it, because it makes you less competent at doing it. So that's a good example and is a good model for what we're trying to do with enddistracteddriving.org.
It is such a good example. And of course, MAD, it took time for them to move laws and move the culture What do you think comes first, moving the culture or changing policy and then the culture catches up to the new law?
It requires, too often, it requires a crisis.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with drunk driving, for sure. And that's what has happened with distracted driving as these things have come into our lives. In the worst year of the polio epidemic, the worst year ever, there were less people who died of polio than die every single year as a result of these kinds of things, distracted driving, the use of these phones, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an epidemic, and it ought to be treated like an epidemic. And when you do that, then you try to prevent. It's not, look, we can handle cases for people that get hurt or some family members killed. That's not the point. The point is to try to prevent this from happening, and that would be much better for everybody. As I said, this is, you know, we're on at Independence Day. These things, mm-hmm. it's a sort of a double entendre that these things are called cell phone. We should not be trapped by these devices.
I know.
We can do a message like I just demonstrated. And the iPhone actually pops up now, the new ones, and it says you will not receive notifications because it detects that the car is moving. And unless you disable that, you have a perfect excuse. There's an app for that.
There's an app for everything.
There are apps that will notify the person who's trying to text you or call you that you're not receiving calls because you're
in motion.
Driving.
Yeah,
that's right.
What do you think, too, going beyond the driving issue of the growing trend around the country of people really having to consciously set aside time and even sometimes go to a special place to do a digital detox? You know, people will actually now check into spas and camps where they confiscate your phone for at least 3 days because they think it takes at least that long for you to decompress, unwind, retrain your brain not to be so attuned to those pings on your device.
Right, and I would just say that there's one thing for sure that you can do for yourself, and you have a perfect reason to protect against it, and that is when you're driving, decide this is the time that I'm going to experiment with not being on the phone. In other words, protect yourself from the condition that you're talking about. I will say this, if people were decide just for the rest of this week or maybe just tomorrow, decide I'm going to turn that phone off when I'm driving, period,
mm-hmm.
you'll experience the greatest sense of freedom, independence, on Independence Day.
That's right.
That you've had in the last decade, because this phone is no longer, at least for that period of time, dominating your life.
You can turn it off, or you can do something as simple as, say it's in your purse, just put your purse in the back seat so that you're not tempted to grab it.
That's right. And you can, some of these phones, you can program them in such a way that the ringtone would be different depending upon the person that's calling. So it might be your daughter, your son, your grandmother, whatever the situation, somebody that might need you and it might be an emergency. You hear that, and then you can pull off the road safely and be able to make the phone call. It's very simple to do, but this is, you know, I just reflected on it. I said, when I was 16, I guess it was, in St. Augustine growing up, I remember precisely where I took my driver's test. Since then, I never got any driver's instruction at all. Nobody has attempted to teach me how to drive with my mind focused elsewhere when I'm on a cell phone. There's not a single person that offers such a course because it's impossible to do. And the fact that it's impossible to teach somebody how to drive successfully distracted without depending on luck proves the point.
That's
right. You cannot do it.
As you always say, one text or call can wreck it all.
Absolutely.
So if you're just tuning in, be aware there's a new hands-free driving law in Georgia. You cannot drive in that state anymore while holding your device. It has to be hands-free. Be aware. Be safe out there on the roads. And you can go to terrellhogan.com if you want Wayne to come and give a free distracted driving safety presentation to your business or group. Wayne, have a great 4th of July, and thanks so much for being here.
Happy Independence Day.
Yeah, thank you. And speaking of that, later in the hour, some tips for celebrating the 4th safely, particularly if you're that guy or girl that likes to set off all the fireworks on your block. That's later. But up next, African Americans and their longstanding loyalty to the Democratic Party. Some real talk on our special feature right after this.
What can you get for $40? A day of health and wellness designed for you. Join WJCT and Baptist Health at A Day for Her, Saturday, August 18th at the Hyatt Hotel. Fashion expert and everyone's girlfriend, Bobby Thomas, will be this year's speaker. Tickets are $40 till July 15th, so get yours today. WJCT.org/events.
In the jungles of El Salvador, two reporters launch a drone.
There it goes.
They're searching for an elusive ship with lucrative cargo. Not drugs, sharks, and their fins.
All right, there we go. Wow.
I can hear it.
And migrants who spend months, sometimes years at sea, working under brutal conditions.
There it is.
That's it.
Slavery at Sea, on the next Reveal.
Saturday afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Listen to Hot Nights, Cool Jazz, special summer programming, midnight, every night, on 89.9 FM, starting July 4th. I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, for decades, African Americans have been a trusted voting bloc for Democrats. But for decades before that, they voted mostly for Republicans. Some critics in the community are now saying the two-party system has done little to help African Americans advance in today's America. That's the topic of today's Real Talk. Take a listen now as host Charles Griggs discusses this with his guests, Attorney Obi Umuna, former co-host of The Chat, Henny Stewart, and meteorologist Steve Smith. Take a listen.
Obi, should African Americans continue to trust the Democratic Party, or Republicans for that matter, as its only hope for political progress, or should it look elsewhere?
I think that's a great, I'm glad we're here talking about this, and I think that's a great question. I think the real issue is, how do we as African Americans truly get what we need, and how do we determine what we need? And I personally believe neither party is going to give us what exactly we need. But the Democratic Party has been the party that has been the one that's most willing to listen. But we need to be a lot louder in what we tell them.
So when you say that, locally here, we know that African-Americans make up a little more than 30% of the population and just about 28% of the registered voting bloc here. When you say more... How can we move that forward? Because it just registering voters alone could be a solution.
Well, the problem that I feel like Democrats and Republicans have has been basically messaging to African-Americans. If they want African-Americans, if Democrats want African-Americans to come out and vote, they need to make their messaging towards them, not towards middle class white America. The Democratic Party, black voters have been the biggest block of the Democratic voters, but they get the least amount of messaging, least amount of policy work done towards them.
So, Henny, do you think that the Republican Party is an alternative, or do you think that African Americans should continue to sort of push the Democratic Party with more issue-related ideas, maybe even more candidates?
I'm going to piggyback on what you said. We're just not, lately, we're just not getting what we need from the Democratic Party. But I'm also going to go as far back and say, and don't criticize me for saying this, but if you do, I'm okay with that. I think a lot of this is rooted in education. I think most times we don't even know what we need ourselves. And I'm speaking as far as voting. I think if we educated ourselves a little more on what the parties are, what it really means, I think we would be in a better place.
So, Steve, you think one of the arguments is that some believe that political independence is the best choice for Black community, for the Black community to break with the two parties. Do you think there's a chance that that could as an alternative?
Ooh, that could have some merit, especially if you look at the success or maybe lack thereof of the Tea Party. There is a Republican Party, but I think there's another branch called the Trump Party. Now, Trump is kind of a party of one, and that's a whole nother conversation. History, I think, is going to tell us a lot of what we need to know. And let me go back a few years before while President Barack Obama was running for office. If you remember, talk show host Tavis Smiley used to have a summit every year.
Yes.
And I remember watching it during that election cycle. And he was saying, hey, don't get caught up in the ethnic background of any one candidate. And this is going to go back to one of your points, Henny.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what you need to do is we need to have an agenda of the things we like that are going to impact our community. We need to take that agenda and talk to the various candidates and see which ones are going to abide by our agenda. And those that do, we're for them. Those that don't, get put on the back burner. Now, in the process of doing all of that, if you remember, he and Tom Joyner kind of parted ways. A lot of people didn't care for what Tavis Smiley had to say. But in the last couple of years, more and more, I've heard people saying, we need to have an agenda. I hear other talk show pundits saying, you need to put together an agenda. So if you don't have your agenda, what litmus test are you going to hold people to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At the same time, with my broadcasting background, I remember, in particular, radio disc jockey days, I remember as rap music was slowly trying to make its way into the forefront. They went to the establishment in the music industry and they said, you know what, guys, just give us a small place at the table. Even let us have a kid's table, but give us a small place at the table. You guys, I don't know about y'all. So finally they said, all right, we're going to do this for ourselves. They sold music at the skating rinks, at the nightclubs, out the back of their cars. They did a whole bunch of things.
Some of the best music ever come out of a trunk.
Okay. And then all of a sudden we look at it today, you can't hardly push a product without some kind of hip hop, rap, trap music in the background. Because these guys said, we're going to do this for ourselves. And basically the industry responded, this all goes back to dollars, side subject.
So how do you energize people to take that type of stand when it comes to the electorate?
Again, let's go back to history. Whatever you think our challenges are, be it bigotry, racism, social injustice, let's go back to the election or lack thereof of President Rutherford B. Hayes. Because we couldn't get him straight in the general election, he had to go into Congress.
Yes.
He worked a deal with the Southern legislators to say, if you put me in the White House, I will pull the federal troops out of the South. End of Reconstruction. Up comes Jim Crow. All the side organizations and the bedroom laundry that they would wear, the terrorist groups. Lack of voting rights for African Americans and others. We might as well throw women into that category because women didn't get their right to vote until 1920 something, was it?
Yeah. So, but
what I'm saying is, my bottom line is this: voting doesn't cure all ills, but voting is a big step. And we just found in the last presidential election cycle, when you don't vote, there's dire consequences. Not voting. Voting is a huge step.
But what you're saying is there's opportunity beyond voting. However, voting is the number one resource in order to move things. But the question still remains: how do you energize a community to take such a bold step when we're looking at Me Too? Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's one we talked about this earlier.
Right.
What we're seeing now is a huge number of female candidates that are being run on ballots across the country. But what we haven't seen is that type of same type of upswell of African-American candidates that across the country, even mm-hmm. though there's great angst about policies and policy decisions, you haven't seen really a lot of African-American without outside of the traditional district representation.
Okay.
They're not many mainstream, because what we're seeing now is a lot of women who are running for non-traditional seats. They're taking on a lot of the establishment politicians. So you don't see that happening with African-American candidates.
Well, I think that goes back to what I said earlier, is that, you know, we need to speak louder for what we want. I think.
What about if there's no one listening?
You got to keep talking. I think if you look at what happened in the Doug Jones election in Alabama, that was the first time that people kind of realized what we already knew, that black women go to the polls and they vote more than any other group, and they push them over the top. And so what that's done in a lot of other places is now you're starting to see me as a consultant. People are starting to come and say, hey, I need to make sure I get the black vote. I saw a Levine ad on TV last night on BET, which I would have never seen mm-hmm. at this point in a primary. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we have to do is, now that we start to have this power, we need to speak louder about what we want.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Real Talk, and we're discussing the two-party system and political progress in the black community. Are you speaking with Obi Umuna, Henny, and Steve Smith? And I'm Charles Griggs. And I wanted to go back to that, Obi, because that is a very important point, as we have a lot of political operatives out here that have not traditionally, they've kind of walked up to the line and have not really used the resources of some of the African-American experts in the community in order to push agenda items or to gain support. Do you think that those operatives, you know, if they start to employ more African-American operatives, will they be more likely to push policy initiatives or policy agendas that would be more beneficial to moving African American community forward?
Definitely, and it goes back to what Steve was saying. It's about, if you want the votes, you have to provide us with our agenda. And if you can't, and you can't reach these groups without hiring African American mm-hmm. Operatives or having African Americans in leadership, or even running African Americans in districts that you don't normally run African Americans in.
Yeah. So, what about the Republican Party, though? I mean, where are they on this issue? Because what we talked about earlier is that the Republican Party is kind of being splintered now. You know, you see Republicans and you're seeing the Trump Party, so to speak. Are Republicans in the position to want to broaden their base because they're trying to some of them are trying to make a stand against the Trump Party, so to speak? Do you think there's opportunity there for them to sort of open the tent for some of these African-American issues?
Yeah, I do. Not to sound like the school teacher, but going back to history, there was a time when the African-American vote was Republican following off of Lincoln. Then I think it was pretty much Republican up until the time of FDR. Then it started changing over to Democrat. Then by Kennedy, it really became heavily Democratic. I was watching. Do you remember the talk show host Glenn Beck? Mm-hmm. I don't know if he still mm-hmm. has a program or not, mm-hmm. but a few years ago I was channel flipping and he popped up and I'm like, okay, what does he have to say? And he said, I've got new information about African Americans. I said, okay, IR1, I'll listen to this. And he said, I have new information. Research says that the majority of African Americans are just to the right of the center. And I guess that was his way of trying to say that most African Americans were conservative. But if wanting safe streets, good schools, my house of worship to flourish, jobs, chance at home ownership, fair chance at business ownership, I don't see anything in that being outrageous. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just see that as basic apple pie American values. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's a candidate, Republican or Democrat, that's willing to step to the community and say, hey, putting your faith and your trust in me, I will work to make sure that you have safe streets, good schools.
With that being said, Steve, you know, it has been, we know that most African Americans, you know, they sit sort of right of center on most issues, mm-hmm. however, have been consistently been attracted by the Democratic Party. Why is it so tough for the Republicans to appeal to African-American voters?
I would just say racism is mm-hmm. the main reason. I mean, I think if you look at the undertones of the Trump campaign, there was a huge emphasis on dog whistle politics that obviously that black people were didn't want to be a part of. I think if there was any time a candidate had an opportunity to take black voters away from the Democratic Party, it was Hillary Clinton, but they brought the worst candidate possible, Trump, to do that. Yeah. And so if you have, what you've done is you've made the divide even bigger. I'm a strong proponent, especially, you know, as a Democratic consultant, and my Democratic friends may hate me for this, I think it's important for there to be black Republicans, because if there's not black Republicans, Democrats will take advantage of that black vote. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you need that on both sides for people to realize that the black vote isn't guaranteed. And if it's not guaranteed, then you're going to have people willing to kind of reach out and do things for you because they know they have to get your vote. And they haven't had to do that in many years.
And some would argue that because of the way we are represented district-wise, that we sort of marginalize our opportunity for real progress. We're seeing in the news lately a lot of discussion around the changing laws around gerrymandering. And that has sort of caused more harm than good as it relates to moving issues forward, because while you may be electing African-American representation, you're not being represented totally by people who are living in various communities. And so a lot of these issues are being left on the table.
You know, I want to go back to, if you don't mind, I want to back up a little bit. You asked a question twice about how do you get the community hyped up?
How you get them energized? Yeah.
How do you get them energized? And I've been thinking about that. And I think personally, from what I see, from what I hear, from talking to people, having conversations, it's hope. People want to hear that there is hope. We want a message of hope, and we want you to show. Mm-hmm. You got to show us. And right now, obviously, in this climate, it's extremely, extremely, extremely difficult. Yeah. But I think when these politicians come out of there smart enough and know that the black female holds a lot of power in so many areas, especially when it comes to voting, because when we're in, we're all in, we are loyal. Mm-hmm. If you prove and you show us that that you're going to provide us hope and a way out to help our families, as you said, Steve, good schools, because we're all about our families, believe it or not, yeah. But we do care about our families. Mm-hmm. When you mm-hmm. can do that for us and show us that you have a path and a plan to get us there, oh, you better look out, because we are coming and we are going to be there.
And all of that's good, but in immortal words of Ronald Reagan, trust but verify. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's a lot of smoke being blown out there.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So, and we're going to have to leave it there for now, and thank you all so much for having this spirited conversation. Obi, Umana, Henny and Steve Smith, thank you all so much for speaking with us today. I'm Charles Griggs. Looking forward to the next time we come to you on Real Talk.
Thanks, Charles. Always good to hear that talk. A quick break, and in a moment, what you need to know about fireworks safety this 4th of July, a conversation with Jacksonville Fire and Rescue. Some very timely tips for making sure you're okay this holiday. That's right after this. Keep listening.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions says people fleeing gangs or domestic violence no longer qualify for asylum.
Asylum was never meant to alleviate all problems, even all serious problems, that people face every day all over the world.
So where does this leave the Central Americans being held in federal custody? An asylum reality check this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Next time on The World, Homeland Security has to decide by Thursday about what to do with 1,000 Yemenis living under protected status in the United States. Should it extend their protections or deport them?
To send a Yemeni back to Yemen at this time is simply a death sentence.
That's because Yemen's civil war is still being fought. It's The World.
This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, President Trump and Russia. We talk with Michael McFaul, who served as the U.S. ambassador to Russia under President Obama. We'll discuss the planned Trump-Putin summit and what McFaul's experience was like in the room with Putin. Putin blamed McFaul and Hillary Clinton for the protests surrounding Putin's third election as president. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency is the largest investigative arm of the Department of Homeland Security. It was created after 9/11 and now employs 20,000 people. Some want the agency to be dismantled. But what exactly does ICE do? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, tomorrow is Independence Day. If you live in Duval County, it is officially illegal to shoot off fireworks on the 4th of July. Unofficially, of course, thousands of you are going to do it anyway. Now, if you live outside of Duval County or you plan on violating the law, which we do not encourage, either way, there are some safety tips you need to be aware of to avoid serious injury. Because fire and rescue every year has to deal with people accidentally injuring themselves on the 4th of July. Tom Francis, Public Information Officer with Jacksonville Fire and Rescue Department, is on the line now with a few tips to celebrate the 4th safely. Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Good morning, Melissa. To be quite honest, I'm just now getting over Germany's elimination at the World Cup.
But other than that's right. Yeah, you're still recovering from that pain. I'm so glad you could be with us because you're going to helpfully save a lot of listeners from pain this 4th of July. There will be a lot of firecrackers, a lot of noise, a lot of frightened dogs, including my own tomorrow night. As people prepare to make merry on the 4th, let's go over the laws, if we could, first of all. There's a difference between the law in Duval County and surrounding counties when it comes to fireworks, correct? Particularly St. John's County.
Yes, that is correct. But specifically, it still, nonetheless, is applicable with Florida statute. I think it's Section 791 stipulates that anything that leaves the ground or explodes is illegal, unless, of course, you have the infamous agricultural exemption, which requires a permit. With that being said, we should, though, focus on those things that are legal, because it's a bit of hypocrisy, I always felt, to talk about fire safety when it comes to fireworks and then say, well, if you're going to violate the law, then here are the safety measures you should adhere to. So I believe the safety measures should be applicable to those things that are legal. In this case, sparklers and some of the what they call nuisance and noisemakers, novelties, things like that. So especially with sparklers, this is one of the perhaps most underestimated items found typically on the 4th of July during every celebration. Underestimated in the sense that sparklers can generate temperatures in excess of 1,000 degrees. I mean, we're talking about 200 degrees hotter easily than a standard butane lighter. And once you're aware of that, then you suddenly become quite aware also, hopefully, of the fact that when children are around sparklers, you wouldn't want to give them a butane lighter. So therefore, safety with children and sparklers is absolutely a must. That is a necessity. And so with that being said, I believe the best thing to keep in mind is, first and foremost, if you're teaching your children how to use a sparkler, then begin by telling them to hold it at arm's length and never hand a lighted sparkler to another person, child notwithstanding. And always remember that the sparkler wire and stick will remain hot after the flame has gone out. So those are the three things right there. If you can keep those in mind, then hopefully we will not have any accidents associated with sparklers and children.
Right. And that is such a concern. Any other concerns, any other words of warning you have for folks out there?
Yeah, obviously the safety issues as it relates to fireworks in general, without going into too many specifics and sounding too academic here, should never, ever be dismissed. I mean, the safety issues that range from making sure that you have, let's say, a charged garden hose nearby, that you have a bucket so that you can go ahead and drop, use sparklers in a bucket of water. That would always be a good idea. Also, make sure to only light one item at a time and never attempt to relight a dud. And that would include also a sparkler. And with that also in mind, let's make sure to purchase all fireworks only from licensed vendors. I can't tell you how many times we discover accidents that resulted because, you know, Uncle Ernie had made in his shed some sort of firework that he thought was really good and was trying to sell it to somebody next door to use.
Right. And that's important, too. And a lot of people, they drive down to the St. Johns County line to buy this stuff. There'll be people doing that today. Try to keep in mind what Tom is saying when you stock up for the 4th of July. And, you know, I'm going to have to go out today, Tom, and buy a thunder shirt for our dog because he just can't take it. He cannot take it.
I know. My dog, old English bulldog, has the same trouble all the time, too. I mean, as soon as fireworks go off, she immediately runs to the furthest recess anywhere in the house. And I feel really bad about it. But, you know, be kind to the pet, you know, hold them. Try to calm them down the best that you can. What you just said, Melissa, that's, of course, the classic approach to get that device. But at the same time, just try to, you know, convince your pet that this will be over.
That's right. It'll be over soon. And have a great holiday, Tom. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate you joining the show. Have a good holiday.
Sure thing. Sure thing, and a happy 4th to you and all your listeners.
All right. He's Tom Francis, Public Information Officer for Jacksonville Fire and Rescue. Be safe out there. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merschart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Piotr Chefchik of the Symphony composed and performed our theme. 1A's up next. Your questions about ICE answered. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be off tomorrow for the 4th holiday. Charles Griggs will be our guest host on Thursday. And if you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8, keep on listening for the Electro Lounge. Hey, everybody, have a safe and happy 4th of July. We'll see you soon.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.